You're listening to Medscape's In Discussion series on psoriasis, a podcast where thought leaders and clinical experts share their diverse insights and practical ideas for optimizing patient care. This series is hosted by Dr. Stephen R. Feldman, editor of the Journal of Dermatological Treatment and professor of dermatology at the Wake Forest University School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Relevant disclosures can be found with the episode show notes on Medscape.com or the Medscape app. The topics and discussions are planned, produced, and reviewed independently of advertisers. This podcast is intended only for U.S. healthcare professionals.
Hello, I'm Dr. Steve Feldman. Welcome to Medscape's In Discussion series on psoriasis. This is the last episode of our fourth season, and we're finishing this season by asking the question, can what you eat change your skin? We know that psoriasis is far more than a skin condition. It's a systemic inflammatory disease with deep ties to cardiovascular risk and metabolic health. Today, we'll explore one of the most compelling and practical questions in psoriasis care right now, whether what patients eat can move the disease. We'll finally have some rigorous diet research to explore. To discuss this critical topic, we have the leading investigative dermatologist on the planet. He's the James J. Leiden Endowed Professor of Dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, where he serves as director of the Psoriasis and Phototherapy Treatment Center and director of the Center for Clinical Sciences and Dermatology. He's also a co-investigator on the landmark Medipso randomized clinical trial that was published in JAMA Dermatology, which found that a 16-week Mediterranean diet intervention improved psoriasis severity in patients on stable topical therapy, with 47% of those in the diet group achieving PASI 75 compared to none in the control group. That's like better than etanercept does. That's biologic level efficacy, and I'm excited to discuss it with an expert. It is a genuine pleasure to welcome Dr. Joel Gelfand to In Discussion.
Steve, you know, thank you for that kind introduction, enthusiastic introduction, I should say. And this is a really important topic because, let's face it, our patients are really interested in other approaches beyond medical management of psoriasis. They all often ask about their diet, and they get sources of information about the impact of diet on their skin from all sorts of places, some reliable, some not reliable. And so this is a nice opportunity to sort of level set what we know and what we don't really know.
This is such a great topic, but before we get into it, we have you. And so I just want to quickly review some of the things that kind of lead up to this, some of your past projects. You did fundamental work on the epidemiology of psoriasis.
2 decades ago, we got interested in the idea of how a chronic inflammatory skin disease could promote atherosclerosis and cardiovascular events and mortality. And you know, some of that data went back to the early 70s when some colleagues of ours at Brown sort of just observed in their hospitalized patients, they seemed to have a lot of cardiovascular disease. But speed forward, about 3 decades later, we had the access to large population-based databases, a very rigorous validated information about people with psoriasis and their treatments and their outcomes. And that really changed the framework of how we think about psoriasis from a disease that, well, it's just affecting your skin. You don't have to worry about your health or anything like that. To actually, the skin, when it's involved in psoriasis, is a harbinger of things to come. The more extensive your psoriasis is on your skin in terms of the biosurface area affected, the more likely you are to develop cardiovascular events, die prematurely, develop diabetes. And this is all independent of traditional cardiovascular risk factors, independent of their BMI and their blood pressure and things of that nature. So it's a very powerful finding for our clinicians out there. Because like as dermatologists, when we walk in a room, we could see cardiovascular risks sort of staring us in the face. And we know we see a patient who has extensive disease, they have, you know, a clinically meaningful higher risk of cardiovascular events and diabetes over time. And it's a harbinger of things to come. And the good news, though, is that there's lots that we could do to lower risk of cardiovascular events and mortality. And we could certainly talk a little bit more about that here if you want. You know, what's the medical management of cardiovascular risk? And of course, but the part of the reason why Dr. Gonzalez-Quintero, who's an International Psoriasis Council fellow with me years ago and has done a lot of cardiovascular risk studies with me, and we were sort of looking at the work in the Mediterranean diet, and Alvaro's in Madrid, so it's a place where it studies, the landmark studies called Priomed, came out of, where they studied thousands of people, not with psoriasis, I mean, some had psoriasis, but thousands of people, and showed that people taking a Mediterranean-style diet, It's a diet with a lot of olive oil, a lot of salmon, you know, proteins from salmon and oily fishes, a lot of nuts, a lot of fiber, that they have lower risk of diabetes and cardiovascular events and mortality over time compared to a usual diet. And so we thought, you know, this would be an important thing to study in psoriasis because we know our patients are already more prone to cardiometabolic disease. And the anti-inflammatory effects of this diet, which are known to, you know, lower, say, C-reactive protein in the blood, lower IL-6, which is important for cardiovascular disease, that there's some signals that may be helpful for people with psoriasis.
This is great, Joel. Why don't we focus on diet and then maybe come back to some of the other things you've worked on. Tell me about this study that you did. It seemed remarkably well done.
Yeah, so, you know, this is, again, I had the hand to my colleagues in Madrid, a single center, where there's a lot of experience and expertise in doing dietary trials, particularly of the Mediterranean diet style intervention. And, you know, what was unique is that this is a population with sort of mildish to moderate disease. Sometimes these studies tend to be in people with more extensive disease. This is a more limited bias of area. And that's important because, you know, in a population, most people have, you know, mild psoriasis when it comes down to it, right? So there's an interest in trying to have more generalizable findings here. And at a high level, what they found was that patients who had the Mediterranean-style diet compared to just usual care, that their psoriasis got better over time. They needed to use less topical medications as well, and that's another signal of efficacy. And so, you know, it's a single center, fairly small, short-term study, but very promising, I think, in terms of having, you know, one, a recommendation that we could give to our patients that we know more broadly is associated with very good health outcomes. And from this, you know, one single center study suggests that it may help improve psoriatic disease as well. You know, in research, Steve, as you know, one study or one trial rarely answers all the questions. I mean, there's a lot more to know about this. You know, one question would be is, could we do this in the United States? You know, the American diet is very different than what happens in Spain, for example. And so, you know, could we get Americans with psoriasis to eat a more Mediterranean style diet is really an unknown, I would say. And how that would do to the background American diet is unclear, but certainly an area that I think needs future investigation.
Can you tell me more about the specifics of the two groups in this study?
They could not be on systemic therapy at the time. They had to have a BSA greater than 2%, but less than 15%. So it's a little bit different. You could think of it as similar to sort of some of the more recent trials being done with systemic agents, say apremilast, when it was trying to get approved for mild to moderate psoriasis. So it's sort of going at that patient population. You know, as the field of psoriasis research is evolving, what we're learning is that there may be some determinants about how well therapies work. You know, people with shorter duration disease, earlier onset disease, you know, less pretreated with biologics, they tend to respond better in a lot of clinical trials, right? So it's an open question about where dietary interventions work the best. You know, is it best in people who have, you know, early onset disease, haven't used a lot of treatments yet? Does it work across all folks, you know, people who develop disease in their middle age or older versus those who develop it in childhood? Are there aspects of psoriasis, the scalp or the nails, the genitals, that are more or less responsive to a dietary intervention? So, you know, I think at this point, we really have to say that what was found is that in a rigorous study, there's a signal of benefit here. But the clinical meaningfulness, how well it'll work in various settings, still needs to be worked out.
How did we make sure the diet between the two groups was different? Did we, you know, give them prepackaged food or was it an educational program?
They gave the olive oil to one group. There also was a metabolite that comes out of olive oil that they were able to measure in the urine. So that's a way of evaluating adherence. And of course, in Spain, you know, there is some Mediterranean-style background eating. So the groups are probably a little bit closer to one another than what you might see in, say, the United States, where if we randomize a U.S. person to, you know, regular healthy-ish diet, it's likely to look a lot more pro-inflammatory, you know, meats, highly processed foods, fried foods, things like that tend to raise inflammation of blood. And by that, I mean, things like C-reactive protein.
Joel, were you surprised at the magnitude of the impact that was seen?
You know, certainly the efficacy, I think, exceeded our expectations. But again, I think it's hard to, you know, put too much stock in it. It's a small study. So our estimates around how well it worked is not entirely clear. And then, you know, another criticism of this type of work, dietary study work, is that those who are on the active diet tend to be observed a little bit more. They're getting more coaching, you know, and so we don't know how much of the effect is definitively the dietary pattern versus the aspects that go along with trying to adhere with a different dietary pattern also. So, you know, I just put a little caution out there. I mean, I think that as a clinician, I recommend a Mediterranean diet to my patients all the time because we know with some degree of certainty that it leads to better health outcomes that we know our patients with psoriasis are susceptible to, you know, diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So it's sort of a no-brainer. The idea that may give them extra benefit in their skin and maybe the joints, I think is tantalizing and it's something that we need to invest more resources into studying.
Well, what you're saying makes me wonder if we urine tested you right now, would we find olive oil metabolites in your urine?
Well, you may find cheesesteak metabolites. You call me in Philadelphia over here. So,
fair enough. Yeah, you mentioned the coaching, and I am a big believer that visits drive people to use medication better.
Yeah.
All the patients in this study were on topical therapy, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the effect of the study was mediated by getting them to use more topical therapy.
Yeah. It's a reasonable question, although I think what they measured was actually less use of topical therapy. It appears, and the hypothesis would be, that those who were on the Mediterranean-style diet, their psoriasis was getting better, and they didn't need to use topical therapy as much. And so that was sort of a marker of efficacy in a way, and it seemed to be less reported topical use in the dietary group compared to the usual care group.
I thought that was an important point that the paper made. I would just be fearful that, you know, when we've done adherence studies, what we find is if you get people to use the medicine really well for the first week or so,
yep,
their skin clears up, and then they end up less adherent than the group that never used the medicine well, that continues to use it intermittently.
Yeah, so I think that dietary studies are notoriously challenging to do because you're trying to control many elements that are not so easy to control. And so that's why, to me, it's one study. More research needs to be able to be done. You know, maybe a patient population where they're not using topicals at all would be important. Using maybe a comparator diet, you know, where they're getting similar amounts of counseling, for example, but it's not, you know, a Mediterranean-style anti-inflammatory diet, but maybe one focused on other aspects of the health system, like, say, low sodium, for example, low carbohydrate.
One of the other things you've done recently that showed tremendous benefit in improving psoriasis was the use of home phototherapy. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so you know, this is a light study published in JAMA Dermatology a little over a year ago now it came out. And what motivated us to do that study was that there's been a movement in the field of clinical research of having much more patient engagement in all aspects of the work that we do, ranging from selecting what we're going to compare and work on to helping design a study and being a part of managing a study and then being a part of dissemination of the findings. And this study we started planning in the mid-2010s, around 2015, 2016, 2017. And even then, we were having lots of advances in psoriasis, but there were still many patients out there who are interested in phototherapy, and particularly home phototherapy. It's more convenient for them. And that's what motivated the study. Essentially, patients wanted this work to be done. And so we wrote a grant to an agency called BCORI. They fund patient-centered research. And it's very different in a typical trial that you'll see, you know, in the JAD or JAMA Derm and New England Journal of Medicine. It was very pragmatic. You know, patients, just the clinician had to decide, we felt they were candidates for phototherapy at home or the office. The patient was willing to be randomized and they could be on other treatments. They didn't have to wash out or anything. It was just reflecting what we actually do in clinical practice. And it was a large study of over 750 patients. We intentionally tried to have balance among skin types so we could see how well it worked in people with dark skin versus fair skin. And, you know, the take-home message is that patients randomized to home phototherapy do very, very well, especially that, you know, they do much better in adherence. They get many more treatments than they do in the office. They're more likely to get their skin clear, almost clear. They're more likely to have good responses to DLQI. They are probably less likely to go on more expensive therapies like biologics. There was some evidence of that in the data as well. And so, you know, it's an interesting conundrum because as we've gotten more and more effective therapies for psoriasis, that really, you know, can achieve high levels of skin clearance and very well tolerated. The balance we have is those therapies are exorbitantly expensive. You know, in our area in Philadelphia, the local Independence Blue Cross Blue Shield put out a press release saying that they lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And their main blame was, one, a tougher flu season, but also the use of dupilumab for eczema and risankizumab for psoriasis. Right, so heart disease are very common. You know, and if we're going to treat all of our patients with expensive biologics, there's going to be a lot of economic impact there. That being said, we should do what's best for our patients and what our patients need. And so I think what the data shows, particularly at places like Kaiser, where they make home phototherapy very easy to access, that patients are often happy to try it, you know, or maybe prefer it over a biologic, right? And so it offers a nice option for patients who the clinician and patient feel this is a reasonable treatment option for them to do, a good likelihood of improving their skin disease, and is likely to either delay or make not necessary use of biologics in the future for a subset of patients. And then there's another move afoot, you know, coming out of Europe, which is the idea of, you know, this problem, Steve, you and I face all the time in our practice. A patient comes in to totally clear psoriasis on one of our biologics. Maybe they're 22 years old. And the question is, well, what am I going to do now? You know, am I going to be on this for the next 60 years of my life? Right. And that's a difficult choice to try and make. And so knowing that home phototherapy might be in a mix, you know, people have access to that pretty easily. You can imagine a scenario where, you know, people clear their skin and then maybe we're trying to taper off biologics. They have light therapy available to clean things up. They have a little bit of recurrence and new novel topical therapies. You can imagine strategies that if we were able to test them in some rigorous way, that maybe a subset of patients, we could take them off their biologic and then maintain a really pretty clear skin with a combination of home light and some of the novel topicals and things of that nature.
All right, now we're at the interface of your cardiovascular comorbidities and your work in phototherapy. I think there's the belief that if you clear up the systemic inflammation with internal medications, you're going to get rid of that cardiovascular problem. But if you treat people with light, you're only affecting the skin and you're not going to affect the cardiovascular downsides of psoriasis. Is that actually the case?
This is a very mixed signal where the clinical research is currently. And frankly, the answer is we just don't know at this point in time. Ideally, what we'd like is rigorous placebo-controlled trials that look at cardiometabolic disease markers and then ultimately trials of events. Okay. You know, my team, we led a whole series of cardiovascular biomarker studies and imaging biomarker studies. We called them the vascular inflammation psoriasis trials. We tested adalimumab, secukinumab, and ustekinumab, and then a premolas, an open label study. And, you know, what we basically found is that, you know, the 17s and 1223 seemed to have very minimal impact on the major pathways that drive cardiometabolic risk. You know, interestingly, phototherapy within groups lowered aortic vascular inflammation. That was a little bit of a surprising finding. It sort of improved HDLP, which is a metabolomic of how HDL works. So that was kind of interesting. There's other work by Richard Weller suggesting that, you know, ultraviolet light lowers blood pressure and maybe associate lower rates of cardiovascular events. So, you know, that's a long-winded way of me saying that we should not be over-promising things to our patients. You know, I think we should be clearing the skin because we know there's major benefit for people's health and well-being of not living with a burden of extensive psoriasis, right? But then beyond that, until we answer this question more definitively, you know, we need to screen patients with cardiovascular risk factors. We know our patients with psoriasis have much higher rates of insulin resistance, elevated blood pressure, elevated lipids. And so we need to solve that part of this puzzle, right? And then similarly, I think we have to be a little bit careful about how we counsel people about sun exposure. You know, I think that it's not credible to tell people you cannot get any sunlight. That's too dangerous. I mean, that's really very hard to justify that perspective. I think it's certainly reasonable to say, you know, SPF 30, a little bit applied, avoid the sun from 10 to 3 p.m. You know, but 10 to 15 minutes of sunlight a day is probably okay for most people. And, you know, maybe you want to protect your face, you know, or if you have an underlying health problem like connective tissue disease, dermatomyositis or something like that, you may have to think more carefully about these things. And certainly I'm not advocating for, you know, going to the beach and getting a deep, dark tan, you know, but I think things in moderation is probably okay. And there is enough out there that, you know, a lay person may say, well, I heard that sunlight may help my cardiovascular risk. And there's a little bit of stuff there, again, similarly speaking, not definitive. And so the way to lower cardiovascular risk, don't smoke, check your blood pressure and your hemoglobin A1C for diabetes and your lipids, and have those things managed, you know, appropriately, either with diet, exercise, and then some people need medications to manage those things.
Yeah, I imagine that studies of sun exposure and diet have in common that they are hard to control. Did you want to say anything else about your recent work on obesity and cardiovascular risk study?
Well, really now where our work has gone is a new field called implementation science. What implementation science concerns itself with is the idea of like, well, we have this piece of evidence, but this piece of evidence is not being used in clinical practice very well. And can we figure out like what the root causes are and how can we help clinicians deliver more evidence-based care, right? So we know the AAD guidelines and National Psoriasis Foundation guidelines call for screening patients with psoriasis for cardiovascular risk factors and treating them more aggressively. And we also know that despite those recommendations, that patients with psoriasis are actually less likely to get screened for cardiovascular risk factors, that if they have cardiovascular risk factors, they're less adequately to be managed. And the problem is worse, the worse their skin disease is, right? So one of the major initiatives that we're doing, which has been funded by the National Psoriasis Foundation, really shows a tremendous commitment they have to our field to fund this study, is what's called care coordination. And here the idea is that the dermatologist sees their patient like they usually do in clinical practice, follows the guidelines, says, hey, you know, psoriasis increases your risk of cardiovascular disease, and we should, you know, check your blood pressure and get some blood work, you know, check your hemoglobin A1C, check your lipids. And then if things are abnormal, instead of the dermatologist having to follow up on it, we have what's called a centralized care coordinator at the National Psoriasis Foundation. So if things are abnormal, that information goes to the care coordinator and the patient is set up to meet with that person virtually. So it's a shared resource around the country. And then the care coordinator really spends that half an hour with the patient they need to talk about diet and exercise and all the things we talked about today about how psoriasis and cardiometabolic disease go hand in hand. And then they get, you know, an evidence-based plan back to the patient, to their primary care doctor. And our hope is that this will help people, you know, lower their cardiovascular risk as measured by, you know, repeating months later, you know, their cholesterol tests and their blood pressure and see how things change. And, you know, we released a little bit of data at the Society of Investigative Dermatology just about a month ago in Chicago. And the results are pretty striking. The first thing is that roughly 600 patients at 22 centers around the United States participated in this. Okay, so a lot of interest in patients to do this in routine clinical practice. And roughly 80% of patients, when recommended to get their blood pressure done, which is a home blood pressure machine done at home, and get their labs done, completed it. Now, I know in my practice, I have people coming all the time with bad psoriasis. I'm like, we need to test some labs. I'm going to put you on this great drug. It's going to clear your skin. We got to chase them down. Half of them never follow up. Right. You know, 80% of patients followed through and got it done. And so what that tells us, and we know some other work that we've done, is that when we as dermatologists say, you see that rash in your skin, it puts you at higher risk of these things. Patients take it seriously. And then the other thing is, I think as dermatologists, we have great relationships with our patients. You know, we often know them for years. We've often have really helped them tremendously with their skin disease. And so we have great credibility. Okay. Then the second thing we found is that about half of patients had a cardiovascular risk factor that needed medical management. Their blood pressure was elevated. They had diabetes that wasn't known. Their LDL was really severely elevated. You know, so what that tells you us as clinicians is that if we look, we're going to find. Okay. That's, you know, as opposed to like, you know, we're always checking quantiferon golds for patients going on biologics. They're almost always negative. And when they're positive, they're usually false positive. You know, in this case, you know, half the time you're going to find things in your patients that really do need medical management, usually blood pressure medications, statins, things of that nature. And that's unquestionably likely to lengthen their lifespan. You know, but now you're targeting things that we know need to be targeted to lower people's risk of cardiometabolic disease.
Today, we talked to Dr. Joel Gelfand about diet and psoriasis. Joel addresses practical, important problems and does it in the most scientific way we have done in dermatology. Psoriasis is an inflammatory disease, and he showed there's a risk of cardiovascular disease associated with psoriasis. He and his Spanish colleagues did a remarkable study suggesting that an anti-inflammatory diet can make a difference. And I'm not talking about a small statistically significant difference, but a large, meaningful one in patients' psoriasis outcomes. Is the massive, massive effect of Mediterranean diet on psoriasis a direct effect of the diet? I don't know, but it certainly doesn't seem like it would hurt to recommend it to our patients. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Dr. Stephen Feldman for In Discussion.
Thanks for listening to Medscape's In Discussion Psoriasis podcast series with our host, Dr. Stephen R. Feldman. Be sure to look for more In Discussion episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Medscape.com or the Medscape app for show notes, links, and more information on psoriasis.